of the United States government.
This is VOA News. I'm Richard Green. The U.S.'s top diplomat, Antony Blinken, touched down Wednesday in the Middle East to bolster efforts for a truce in the war in Gaza. Blinken met with Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman and Foreign Minister Prince Faisal bin Farhan in Jeddah. The State Department said Blinken and his Saudi counterpart discussed the urgent need to protect all civilians in Gaza and immediately increase humanitarian assistance to those in need. The Saudis announced a $40 million donation to the UN Agency for Palestinian Refugees to support its humanitarian relief efforts in Gaza. The State Department says Blinken will then travel to Israel Friday, where he will discuss the need to ensure the defeat of Hamas in a way that protects the civilian population and does not hinder the delivery of humanitarian assistance. Global concern is mounted over the military conflict, now in its 6th month, in which Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has vowed to destroy Hamas in response to its deadly attack by its fighters in southern Israel on October 7th. Israel's military said on Wednesday it had killed dozens of gunmen and arrested scores more in a raid on Gaza's Al-Shifa hospital. Reuters correspondent Lucy Fielder has more.
Residents of Gaza City in the north described the most intense fighting for months around Al-Shifa. The raid, which began on Monday, sent Palestinians fleeing south. Israel faced fierce criticism last November when troops first raided the hospital. They uncovered tunnels they said had been used as command and control centers by Hamas. Al-Shifa, the Gaza Strip's biggest hospital before the war, is now one of the few even partly working in the north. It has also been housing displaced civilians. Hamas and medical staff deny that the hospital is used for military purposes or to shelter fighters.
That was Reuters correspondent Lucy Fielder. This is VOA News. The United States said Wednesday relations with Pakistan will suffer if it does not probe abnormalities in last month's election and rerun votes if needed. Donald Liu, the top U.S. diplomat for South Asia, told lawmakers the United States had serious concerns about the conduct of the February 8th election and ongoing disruptions of media and social media, including a prolonged shutdown of X, formerly known as Twitter. Istanbul police are now using some of the world's most expensive sports cars as part of Turkey's bid to crack down on organized crime. Dorian Jones reports from Istanbul.
Istanbul traffic police now boast some of the world's supercars. The cars are being seized in a nationwide crackdown on organized crime groups involved in narcotic smuggling and international money laundering. Analysts say Turkey's unique geography has made it an ideal center for international crime. Many of those arrested are international crime figures wanted by Interpol, coming from Europe, Asia, and the United States. Analysts say Turkey's lax financial controls have also made it attractive to organized crime. Dorian Jones, VOA News, Istanbul.
Japanese baseball star Shohei Ohtani's interpreter and close friend has been fired by the Los Angeles Dodgers following allegations of illegal gambling and theft from Ohtani. The interpreter was let go from the team Wednesday following reports from the Los Angeles Times and ESPN about his alleged ties to an illegal bookmaker. A law firm said they discovered Ohtani had been the victim of a massive theft following media inquiries. ESPN reported that at least $4.5 million had been transferred from Ohtani's account to a Southern California gambling operation. News came just before Ohtani made his much-anticipated debut with the Dodgers in the team's season-opening game in South Korea. AP correspondent Gethin Kuba reports.
Shohei Ohtani's RBI single capped a four-run eighth-inning rally in his Dodgers debut, and Los Angeles beat the San Diego Padres 5-2 in Major League Baseball's season opener in Seoul. Ohtani went 2-for-5 in his first game since leaving the Los Angeles Angels for a record $700 million 10-year contract with the Dodgers. The game turned when a routine grounder went through the webbing of first baseman Jake Cronenworth's glove. A crowd of 15,952 was on hand to watch MLB's first game in South Korea. I'm Gethin Kulba.
International Edition delivers insight into world news through eyewitnesses, correspondent reports, and analysis from experts and newsmakers. We also keep you in touch with social media, science, and entertainment trends. That's VOA's International Edition. I'm Richard Green for VOA News.
transitional government over holding elections this year.
It is the country which has not been prepared to conduct free, fair, and credible elections. How can you go for elections when there are forces under different command around the country? This is a recipe for violent and non-peaceful elections.
South Africa's ANC pushes to keep Zuma's party out of the upcoming elections. Russia donates fertilizer and grain to Zimbabwe. Today marks the International Day for the Elimination of Racial Discrimination.
People of African descent face a unique history of systemic and institutionalized racism and profound challenges today. We must respond to that reality, learning from and building on the tireless advocacy of people of African descent.
And we'll hear about the dreams and hopes of a Haitian migrant. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The Deputy Speaker of South Sudan's Transitional Parliament says the country is not prepared to hold free, fair, and credible elections this year. Nathaniel Oyet-Pierre-Reno, who is also Deputy Chair of the Sudan People's Liberation Movement, SPLM-IO, led by First Vice President Riek Machar, says this is due to the intransigence and lack of political will by the current transitional government led by President Salva Kiir. His comments come as President Kiir this week rejected any extension of the transitional period, saying elections should take place this year as scheduled. Pierre-Reno tells me that having elections now would be a recipe for violence because the country is far behind implementation of the revitalized peace agreement.
The question of extension or the conduct of elections, these are paradox in the implementation of the peace agreement. The peace agreement provided for elections at the end of the transitional period. We have been moving on with the implementation of the peace agreement with a lot of difficulties because of lack of political will. The intransigence by the SPLM-IG and their partners in the government have stifled the implementation of the agreement. Most of the provisions that we agreed on and signed by the parties, now they are being undermined in favor of elections. Moreover, elections is not an event. We are saying election is a process, and the preparation includes the implementation of the benchmark, which has been outlined in the revitalized peace agreement, something which our partners does not want to implement.
It seems to me even the United States included, everybody wants the election to take place.
Well, when we decided to resolve the conflict in the Republic of South Sudan in 2015, Croatia was very supportive of the peace process in the Republic of South Sudan. But when the peace agreement of 2015 collapsed, they became very skeptical about the commitment of the parties to the revitalized peace agreement, whether they will implement it or not. And their reservation has now been proven true by the intransigence by the SPLM-IG not willing to implement the provisions of the peace agreement which they signed. It is true that Croatia did not append their signature or agreement. They remain reserved. They remain as observers, exerting pressure from outside the mechanism of the peace agreement, though they are also members of RGMEC. It is our appeal to Troika to reconsider their position because South Sudan deserves peace and stability more than any other political process. It is peace and tranquility that will lead to development in the Republic of South Sudan, that will lead to rule of law, that will lead to the repatriation and the settlement of refugees, over 4 million refugees that are displaced outside the country. This is my appeal to Troika, and we are concerned about it as a party.
Many people think that this constant delay of implementing the peace process and going to election is perhaps deliberate, because some people say you want to stay in power, continue to stay in power.
The delay has been a deliberate strategy by the SPLM-IG. We have always wanted the implementation of the agreement in letter and the spirit. For 8 months of the pre-transitional period, we should have united all the forces that were fighting before the agreement, so that they are brought under one command, so that they don't pose any security threats to the stability of the country. Our counterpart has been very reluctant to implement this provision of the security arrangement.
It seems to me you are saying that the SPLM-IO or that South Sudan is not ready to have election yet. Is that correct?
It is the country which has not been prepared to conduct free, fair, and credible elections. Because we still have many forces under different parties around the country. We have only deployed 6 battalions out of 83,000 troops required for necessary unified forces. How can you go for elections when there are forces under different command around the country? How can candidates go for elections campaign when they are being accompanied by forces that are under their different command? This is a recipe for violent and non-peaceful elections. This is particularly what we are saying.
Nathaniel Oyet-Pierino is the deputy chairman of the SPLMIO, led by South Sudan First Vice President Riek Machar. He spoke with us from South Sudan's capital, Juba. After nearly a year of war, Sudan is suffering one of the worst humanitarian crises in recent history, the United Nations warned on Wednesday, slamming the international community for lack of action. Fighting between Army Chief Abdel Fattah al-Burhan and his former deputy Mohamed Hamdan Dagalo has since April killed tens of thousands and led to acute food shortages and a looming famine. Meanwhile, U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations, Linda Thomas-Greenfield, met Wednesday with representatives of Sudan-based non-governmental organizations that are delivering humanitarian assistance to the Sudanese people. Nate Evans, the spokesperson to the U.S. mission to the United Nations, said the NGO representatives briefed Ambassador Thomas-Greenfield on the humanitarian crisis in Sudan, where a record 18 million Sudanese people are facing acute food insecurity. The French news agency AFP reports the NGO representative noted that while those in need of aid face immense danger, so too are those delivering that aid. South Africa's governing party has gone to court to try stop a newly created rival party from contesting mayor elections. As Kate Butler reports, the party is fronted by disgraced former president Jacob Zuma and has threatened violence if it's barred from the polls.
National elections on May 29 are widely expected to be the most fiercely contested ever, with surveys suggesting the African National Congress Party will win less than 50% of the vote for the first time since the advent of democracy in 1994. Now, a newly formed opposition party named Umkhonto we Sizwe, or MK for short, has infuriated the ANC by naming itself after the ANC's disbanded armed wing, which was formed by Nelson Mandela and fought against apartheid. The fact that former President Jacob Zuma, an ANC stalwart, has thrown his weight behind the rival party has only added insult to injury, and the ANC has suspended him. On Monday, the ANC went to the electoral court arguing the MK party did not meet the necessary criteria when it registered with the Electoral Commission late last year. ANC Secretary General Fikile Mabulala addressed media outside court on Monday, saying the ANC is also taking legal action to try and prevent Zuma from using the storied Umkhonto we Sizwe name.
We are challenging him in two levels in terms of this formation. You must understand, this is the beginning. Here today in the electoral court, we are challenging him in terms of deregistration of this party.
Mabalula said that, additionally, the ANC was pursuing a copyright infringement case against the MK party in terms of the use of the name. While Zuma was forced to resign as president in 2018 amid corruption scandals and is currently mired in several court cases, he remains very popular with his fellow ethnic Zulus in KwaZulu-Natal province. When, in July 2021, he was briefly jailed for contempt of court, South Africa saw the worst violence in its post-apartheid history, with more than 300 killed in looting and rioting. A poll this month by a local research group, the Brenthurst Foundation, showed the ANC getting below 40% and the MK party winning 13% of the vote. Here's the foundation's director, Greg Mills.
Does this mean that South Africa is going to experience a violent election because it's more contested? Well, that remains to be seen. It's undoubtedly going to be very heated, particularly in the KwaZulu-Natal province, where the MK party has around one quarter of the vote.
Already, some members of the MK party, like the party's youth leader, as well as Vizfin Reddy, a Zuma ally, have threatened violence if they are barred from competing in elections. That was Reddy speaking to applause at an MK rally earlier this month, where he said, quote, "This country will be turned into civil war the day that MK is not allowed to campaign and be on the ballot paper. No one will vote. No one in this country will vote. We will make sure." After Monday's arguments from MK and ANC lawyers, the Electoral Court reserved judgment until a later date. An MK spokesman did not reply to multiple requests for comment from VOA. Kate Bartlett, VOA News, Johannesburg.
More than 200 million people who identify themselves as people of African descent who live outside the continent face racial discrimination. As the world marks the International Day for the Elimination of Racial Discrimination today, March 21st, the United Nations says the international community is recognizing that people of African descent represent a distinct group whose human rights must be promoted and protected. Maureen Ojiambo reports.
The International Day for Elimination of Racial Discrimination is observed annually on the day the police in Sharpeville, South Africa, opened fire and killed 69 people at a peaceful demonstration against apartheid pass laws in 1960. Despite the efforts to end racial discrimination, people of the African descent are the most affected. United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres says it is time to fix the barriers preventing an end to the problem.
Racism is an evil infecting countries and societies around the world, a deeply entrenched legacy of colonialism and enslavement. The results are devastating. Opportunities stolen, dignity denied, rights violated, lives taken and lives destroyed. Racism is rife, but it impacts communities differently.
This year's theme is A Decade of Recognition, Justice and Development, implementing the International Decade for People of African Descent. Guterres says racial discrimination continues to destroy lives and limit opportunities, preventing billions of people from enjoying human rights and freedom.
People of African descent face a unique history of systemic and institutionalized racism and profound challenges today. We must respond to that reality, learning from and building on the tireless advocacy of people of African descent. That includes governments advancing policies and other measures to eliminate racism against people of African descent, and tech firms urgently addressing racial bias in artificial intelligence.
United Nations High Commissioner for Human Rights Volker Turk says efforts towards recognition, justice and development for people of African descent must continue beyond 2024.
Millions still endure the consequences of the historical denial of their humanity. Millions more suffer the cruel legacies of colonialism or the memories of the inhuman and criminal enslavement of generations of women, men and children of African descent. National, ethnic, linguistic and religious minorities have had their human rights trampled upon. So too, Roma, indigenous peoples, and many other groups. This year, we also mark the end of the International Decade for People of African Descent.
Turk urges the international community to look into the persistent gaps in the protection of hundreds of millions of people whose human rights continue to be violated.
Today and every day, we remember the victims of racism. We honor every person who continues to raise their voice and fight for change. We have seen progress. Powerful anti-racism movements have shaken governments and demanded equal rights. Countries are adopting new laws. They are taking multiple affirmative action measures. But we are far from where we should be. No country can claim to be free of racism.
The proclamation of an international decade for people of African descent in 2014 marked a significant milestone in the global effort to combat systemic racism and racial discrimination faced by people of African descent worldwide. On this day, as the international decade comes to an end, UN experts say all member states must push forward to end discrimination. Reporting for VOA Africa, I am Maureen Ojiambo in San Francisco.
You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Botti in Washington. Today is Thursday, March 21st. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Ooh. Russia has donated fertilizer and grain to Zimbabwe to help combat the effects of El Nino-induced drought, which has dwindled crop yields in most parts of southern Africa. Zimbabwe maintains good relations with Russia despite international sanctions on Moscow for its war in Ukraine, as Columbus Mavunga reports from Harare.
Zimbabweans clapped and cheered Wednesday as President Emmerson Mnangagwa accepted 25,000 tons of grain and 23,000 tons of fertilizer donated by Russia. Mnangagwa said the donations would help alleviate the drought Zimbabwe is coping with and the targeted sanctions which the government has long blamed for the country's economic doldrums.
Zimbabwe and the Rising Federation continue to be subjected to the radicals and the illegal sanctions imposed by invented powers in the West. Throughout the 23 years of sanctions against Zimbabwe, the Russian Federation has been a true, trusted and dependable ally of the people of this country.
The president added that it should be no surprise that two countries who are the subject of sanctions talk to each other and try to work together. Western countries slapped travel and financial sanctions on Zimbabwe's leadership and affiliated companies in the early 2000s for alleged election rigging and human rights abuses. The U.S. recently removed sanctions on most Zimbabweans, but a few prominent figures, including President Mnangagwa, remain on the list. Meanwhile, Russia and its president, Vladimir Putin, were hit with sanctions following Russia's invasion of Ukraine 2 years ago. On Wednesday, Russian ambassador Nikolai Krisoronikov said the donated fertilizers would aid Zimbabwe's agricultural production.
It is a commitment made by Russia to continue to support states and regions in need to do its utmost to prevent a global food crisis through participation in establishing a more equitable system for the distribution of resources. And let us not forget that food security cannot be achieved without fertilizers, as they ensure growth, resilience, and productivity of agricultural crops.
However, the fertilizers may not work in Zimbabwe's current growing season, as most crops have been dried by a lack of rain. In an interview, Alexander Rosero, an international relations professor at African University, said he was not surprised by Russia's donations to Zimbabwe.
Zimbabwe does not have an ambivalent foreign policy with regards to Russia. Its position in terms of its interaction with Russia, it's very clear. Zimbabwe is on the side of Russia at whatever cost. So it is not surprising. I wouldn't know why it looks like a surprise that Zimbabwe has received some gift from Russia. And remember, these are fulfillments of pledges already made to Russia some time ago.
Zimbabwe Electoral Commission sent a mission to Moscow to observe the Russian elections this week, in which President Putin won another 6-year term. At a press conference in Moscow, Commission Chair Priscilla Chigumba declared the elections to be credible.
We found the general atmosphere to be conducive for elections. The mood was relaxed and cheerful as people were exercising their right to vote. It is our view that this is a clear sign of a mature democracy in which elections are not perceived as a life and death activity.
The remarks drew wide criticism in Zimbabwe, given the way Electoral Commission ran the country's 2023 elections, which were plagued by irregularities and delays and were condemned by several observer missions, including from the Southern African Development Community. Columbus Mavunga, VOA News, Harare.
Thousands of Haitians have been fleeing their country's economic and political instability even before the latest outbreak of violence. The first stop for many is South America, where some tried to work before headed for the U.S. VOA's Austin Landis met with one man on the Colombia
Panama border preparing to cross the treacherous Darien Gap.
Since Clifton Ariste left Haiti 6 years ago, his dream destination has always been the United States.
My body, I feel good in my body when I'm speaking English.
He learned English from listening to American rap music and recorded a music video himself while living in Chile. Ariste left Haiti in 2017 because he wanted an opportunity to make music and work, and gangs were already tightening control of the country.
You must be scared about going outside, going to buy something. You know, you don't want to leave.
According to data from Panama's Migration Authority, Haitians are consistently among the top three nationalities that come to the Darien Gap on their way to the U.S. They often pass through this part of Colombia. Like Ariste, many first tried to work in Chile or Brazil before moving on once again. And the new outbreak of violence in Haiti's capital over the past month means more Haitian migrants could be on the way. Gangs now control most of Port-au-Prince. They have left bodies in the streets and persuaded the country's prime minister to resign. Infrastructure in Haiti has also taken a hit. Nora Love is a regional emergency director with the International Rescue Committee.
The airport's not working. The docks are not working. The roads are blocked. People are just kind of like they're locked into their area of where they're living.
According to Panamanian officials, more than 46,000 Haitians crossed the border from Colombia in 2023, and about 5,000 have already crossed this year. Ariste left Chile, saying it was hard to find work there, and he felt people in Chile discriminated against him because he's Black.
I got fear. I don't have confidence, you know, because they treat you like, and no, they don't treat you well. They don't treat you well.
He worries about his mom in Haiti, but he doesn't want to talk to her until he can offer help.
Not because I don't love her. It's because I don't want to talk. I don't want to keep talking with this person now. So I just want to make action. I want to be great to help my family.
The latest figures from U.S. Customs and Border Protection show agents encountered more than 10,000 Haitians at the U.S.-Mexico border in January. Austin Landis, VOA News, Necoclí, Colombia.
And that's it for this Thursday, March 21st edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for being our guests this morning. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I'm James Botti, Washington, saying, have a great day, and please be safe, whatever you do.
Firstborn daughters face pressures and often seen as the third parent to their young siblings. On this week's episode of Our Voices, we hear testimonies as well as experts' take on how firstborn daughters handle the responsibilities of being a caretaker and a house helper in a family, even from a very young age. Join the conversation each week right here on Our Voices. Join the conversation on Wednesdays at 1900 UTC on the Voice of America.
Around the clock, the Voice of America keeps you in touch with the latest news.
Tune in at the top of every hour, every day of the week.
For the 5-minute VOA newscast.
We bring you reports from our correspondents and interviews with newsmakers from around the globe.
Give us 5 minutes and we'll give you the world.
VOA,
your trusted source for news and information.